back. Pulls up the three. Boom! Knocks it down. Curry from the corner at three. Puts it in.
For overtime. Makes it. Garrett. Murray.
Welcome to the MVP cast from me, Mark Woods. Our guest in this edition, someone I've really wanted on it since we started this up. He's been an ever-present figure on the basketball scene in the UK for the best part of, I think, three decades or more now. A man who always gets his shot off, but who's captured so many of the images that you'll have seen from big games and big moments. The photographer extraordinaire of British basketball, Mansour Ahmed. Thanks for joining us on the MVP cast.
My pleasure, Mark. Thanks for having me.
I want to ask you later about the craft of photography and how you go about that, because I'm sure a lot of people, you know, have seen you at games, see other photographers at games, and wonder just how you go about it. But let's go back to the start of your interest in basketball and the craft of taking photographs. Where did this first idea, this hobby, and then later your vocation in life, I think we could call it, where did this all interest come from?
Well, I first started photography when I was at college, so going back almost 30 years ago. Without giving my age away. I was doing a City and Guilds in information technology back then, and I noticed that you could actually do two more GCSEs. And having a look down the list, there was all sorts of weird GCSEs back then that nobody would ever think you could do, like pottery making and all. I'm thinking they'd do a GCSE in that. Anyway, down the list there was photography, and I thought, oh wow, I don't mind doing a bit of this. I remember doing a bit in high school in the chemistry labs, learning about developing photos and negatives and film and stuff. And I think that kind of piqued my interest. So I did a year's GCSE in photography, and basketball was always my dream sport because I hated playing football outside in the rain. Keep me indoors, please. And so I just married both together, and it took off from there.
Can you remember what the first time was you pitched up at a game, camera in hand, and thought, I'm going to take some snaps?
It's funny that, because the first game I actually did was a BBL playoff final.
Starting high?
Yeah, I went straight to the top. It was the Carlsberg final, 1989, I believe it was, at the NEC. And if memory serves me right, I think it was Kingston against Sunderland. I remember Kingston had Alan Cunningham, Martin Clark, Martin Henlon, Kevin Cadle was the coach. Sunderland had a young Steve Bucknell, Russ Saunders, Kenny Nottage, and if I'm not mistaken, I think Craig Lynch was the coach of Sunderland back then. And it was just amazing being courtside, and you know, you could reach out and physically touch the players. That's how close I was to the action, and I guess it was a drug, and I've been hooked on it ever since.
What's it like that time when you take your seat by the courts, and you've got the best seat in the house, probably, other than the players' benches and stuff. I mean, when you go to a big game like that, I suppose early on even, do you almost sit there with a certain sense of intimidation because you're granted a license that most fans would kind of kill for?
No, I don't think so. I think it's a privilege. For me, it's a privilege to be sat courtside because obviously I'm closer to the action than the average fan would be. But with it, I also believe that I'm there to document a game, a final. I'm there to document basketball history. And so for me, I don't let the occasion faze me. I think I'm there to do a job, and I don't really think too much about, wow, I'm so close to the players, or look, there's so-and-so. Because if I start thinking of that, then it's taking away from what I'm there to do, which is an essential part of my job, is to take photographs.
I mean, you've been to, like I have, Eurobasket, World Cups, NBA games, GB internationals, so we could pick out many games. Is there any really game for you that when you sit down, that's maybe even looking at the photos, that was my favorite? That's the game that if I could do that game again and sit there with my lens out there, take it in, I'd do that.
That's an easy one. 1999, Good Friday, Manchester against Sheffield.
That's everyone's favorite game ever.
Yeah, but for me, it was even more special because what was on the line, I mean, Manchester's my nearest local team, and I used to follow the Giants week in, week out, and to see them playing for the championship that ultimately came down to the final shot was just amazing. And the fact that Terrell Myers hit the shot and actually ran towards where I was sat made it even more sweeter for me because I was there to capture it. And one of my most favourite pictures ever is the one where Chris Finch is hugging Terrell, and all you can see is all the other players running to hug Terrell for sealing the title for them. And for me, that's one of my favourite moments.
And here we are, like 20 years later, and Dan Routledge was saying, our good friend was saying that about this game recently on the Hoops Fix podcast. Yeah, that night, I don't think we've ever seen a drama quite like that before in British basketball, where there was so much at stake. Obviously, it was a packed house at what was the MEN Arena. And here are this crowd, this buzz, and you're there, and this is all going on right meters away from you.
Oh, absolutely. And it's, in a way, it's difficult not to get sucked up into the emotions of the game, you know. But like I said, you're there first and foremost to document the game. And sometimes you just got to put your blinkers on and go for it. Because if you start thinking about, oh my God, there's 15,000 fans here, or what's going to happen in the next possession, then you're kind of losing the focus, pardon the pun, of what, you know, you're trying to achieve. And I'm there to make a basketball picture first and foremost, you know. And for me, I could have taken thousands of action shots that day, but nothing quite beats getting that shot that sums up the whole thing in one picture. The emotion, the excitement, the celebration, you know. And I was there and I was lucky.
I think one of the things sometimes that I find, I'm sure you do too as well, when you go to big games, sometimes obviously basketball games, especially over a season, can blur into one, and then you do find yourself at a genuinely big game. We don't have that many of them in this country, but you go to an Olympic final, as you and I did in London in 2012, or you're at, you know, a big NBA game in London when there's a real buzz around the place, and sometimes you do actually find yourself going, oh, I'm at this game matters more, this is the game that, yeah, millions of people would love this ticket tonight, even just to be there, but to be that close to it. And, I mean, can you, what for you do you think, was that Olympic final your biggest game, those Olympics? Or, you know, I mean, you documented Jordan when he came to Paris with the Bulls, which you all remember, you know, that it was such an incredible experience, it was like a circus going on. I mean, is there a thing for you that said that's as big as I've ever been at?
You know what, Mark, that's a great question, and I would have to agree with you. I think London 2012 was a pinnacle for me, because I've applied unsuccessfully to get into an Olympics for near enough 15 years, and it's very difficult to get in. I mean, you know, athletes have to perform at their best to get into Olympics, and so do journalists, photographers, commentators. You know, it's not a free ticket to get in. And when I was there, it was like, right, take a deep breath, you're here now, let's get to work, let's make these images, do some work. And, you know, it was an amazing experience. And for me, that's probably the pinnacle so far. I mean, I'd like to go and do an NBA All-Star game. I'd love to do an NBA Finals, but that's way in the future. I mean, if I pull it off, I pull it off. But for me right now, London 2012 was the highlight.
I mean, I remember that as a British media, we had to fight for a lot of people to get into that. It wasn't easy. I mean, there was a few of us like me who were there from the very outset, but there was a lot of politicking actually went on to get media into that. But I think what I thought that was very special about that is there was a lot of us who have been doing this game for years, that at various points, sometimes in the GB games, but in other games as well, we all sort of find ourselves there pre-game thinking, yo, look at this. You know, we've been at those Thursday night BBL games in Cheshire, or Chester probably more accurately, and here we go to the Olympic final. And I suppose to an extent, if you've, like you, have worked your way from the ground up, it's nice to get that reward.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's like chalk and cheese. For me, it was almost like, whoa, am I really here? Because, you know, you see all these superstars from other countries playing and you think, Mansoor Ahmed, you're at the Olympic Games. It doesn't get any bigger than this. And for me, it was a pinnacle of doing almost, what, 25, 26 years worth of hard slog. For me, getting to the Olympics was like a reward. It was like, right, you've got your golden ticket now. Go and enjoy yourself. And enjoy I did. It was an amazing experience.
That's the high. Worst place you've ever photographed at?
Worst place, well, that's an easy one. Northgate Arena. on a Sunday night.
Of the legendary cement floor.
Cement floor, the tungsten lighting, you know. And you got to remember, back then we were shooting on film. And so you'd spend countless hours in the darkroom trying to get something from the game. And, you know, I'd shoot maybe 5-6 rolls of black and white film, and I might not even get 2 shots from that arena. And it was just awful, and I just hated it. But it was just another game I had to go and cover, and, you know, I had to bite my lip several times when I'm there, cursing myself inside, and it's just one of those.
You were there through most of, if not all, really, of that kind of glory era of the BBL, when people were losing money hand over fist in most places, but the crowds were huge, the players were huge characters, etc. I mean, what teams really stand out for you? Because you've been there up and seen all these performers, these great people like the Alton Birds, the Alan Cunninghams you mentioned as well. I mean, is there a player for you that, when you look back on that, going, that he summed it up for me?
Well, there were several. I mean, Colin Irish was always one of my favourite. His work rate was just unbelievable. From the moment he would step on the court till the moment he would go back home, he was unbelievable. And I enjoyed photographing him. You know, he always brought something different every game. But you got to remember, back then, more or less all the teams were playing out of purpose-built arenas. So the lighting was good, the fan base was loud, you know, and it was great to cover games like that with players like Colin Irish. Another favourite player of mine, Trevor Gordon. Again, you know, a big man doing the dirty work inside, rebounding, setting screens. And he was a joy to watch. And sometimes you always get sucked up into that situation where, do I put my camera down and just watch these players go at it for 40 minutes? But then common sense kicks in and you think, no, you're there for a reason. Pick the camera up and start taking pictures. They're two, you know, Colin Irish, Trevor Gordon come to mind. I mean, there were some other players, British-born players like Jason Swain. You could always count on him for a good performance. Who else? Let's see. Eric Bergs, who was one of my favourites, with Robert Youngblood back in the Leopards days.
Big cats. The big cats. Billy Mims, big cats.
That was a squad right there. But, you know, we move on, and there's new players always on the scene. I mean, right now we're in Manchester, and Willie Clayton is doing his thing up here, and, you know, always getting a double-double, and he's a joy to watch, photograph as well.
One thing it strikes me from that era, is only really when we're talking before we press the record button today, was that the wealth of photographic archive that you used to find from that era, and even the 60s and the 70s, that if you go to one of the archives, or you could find magazines or look through newspapers, you know, there was always tons of photographs of the players in the day. It was never hard to find them, because they were in their papers every week. I mean, isn't it extraordinary that it's changed now that, I mean, if you go to a cup final, your papers or your photographs go out to lots of newspapers and websites, don't appear in that many as they used to, because basketball isn't getting the coverage. But I think that for me is the biggest change, that, you know, if I was looking to in 20 years time to look back at this era, yeah, sure, I could go to your massive memory bank of photos, but in terms of printed stuff, it's not that much anymore.
No, there wasn't. And you gotta remember, back then we had, you know, a wealth of magazines. You know, we had FIBA Basketball Monthly, we had a weekly newspaper called Slam Dunk, we had Tip-Off, we had, you know, there was quite a few publications, and people could, you know, pick them up off the shelves in W.H. Smith's or any other good, you know, place. And now you look at it and you think, wow, there's nothing apart from the internet. And that's a shame, really, because the game has so much to offer, especially in this country. But ever since we moved back from being in arenas into small sports centres and that, the game's kind of taken a backward step. And so has the media coverage. I mean, now you barely get a few column inches in the national papers after a cup final. I mean, take the BBL cup final from January, you know, great cup final, and the following day you pick up virtually every national paper and there's no mention. And you think, have we really gone that backwards? Especially with London 2012 come and gone, you would have thought there's a chance for the game to be more publicised, more, you know, given more coverage in all media, not just television, but newspaper, radio. Sadly, it hasn't. And I find that frustrating because obviously my work is then limited to where it can be used. And right now it's just on the internet, on websites, it's just websites really.
There isn't, even I say this now, there isn't anything quite like seeing your work on a printed page or in a big space. Back page maybe, but maybe not, but inside, but it's nice to see that.
Oh, it's wonderful. I mean, even 30 years on, you pick up a paper and you see your name at the bottom and you think, yeah, that's a good day's work. And it makes the hard slog worth it, because what people don't see is, you know, the 6 a.m. wake-ups, they're lugging all your stuff through airport terminals, train lounges, getting on and off buses, public transport, to get that shot. Because all the people will ever see when they pick up the newspaper is a picture with the byline. But as a photographer, you think, yeah, all that hard slog was worth it. And it means a lot.
I mean, you've got, I can't even begin to count thousands. Are we into the millions of photographs now that you're in the digital era and you can just shoot as much as you like? But do you have a photo for you, or maybe even a couple of photos that you have gone, I'm framing that, I'm putting that on my wall, that's my money of money shots?
I go back to 97 McDonald's championships in Paris-Bercy, the all-conquering Chicago Bulls playing in the final against Olympiacos. And that was one of those events where, I mean, 97, I was still new to the photography game. I was only, 9 years in. And I'm there and I'm taking pictures of what many people would say is the greatest of all time, Michael Jordan. And I'm sat there, literally no farther than me and you. I'm like, that's MJ. That's the guy that's on my jacket. That's the guy on my socks. And I remember taking one shot of him, which is his patented move, is the fadeaway jump shot. And I nailed it. And you got to remember, back then there was no digital. It was all film. And so for the best part of about 7 hours, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, did I get it? Did I get it? Did I get it? And the suspense was killing me. And it's difficult because you're still at the game. You still have to do the work. But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, I've got to get this roll of film to the lab, get it processed and see if I've got it. And when the results came back, I looked at it and I thought, man, you just nailed it. You've got him in mid-flight. You've got the hand on the ball. You've got the tongue out there. You've got his J's. And you've got the defender trying to defend this almost undefendable shot. And I thought, that's one of my favourite shots.
And is that on a poster somewhere, or is that above in your bedroom wall?
It's not on my bedroom wall just yet, but who knows? Watch this space.
I mean, so much of this is about relationships. And I don't think I'm flattering you to say you're one of the most popular guys in this sport. And players, coaches, everyone knows you. And you're much beloved. I think that's not overstating it. But that's about building relationships. I mean, over the years, I mean, you always got players harassing you for photos. That goes without saying. But is this part of this job and part of this role, building those relationships where you get players to do things for you, you keep in touch with players, you know that if you come to a game, maybe you're there with your camera, you get that cheeky wink that might be the nice photo?
Yeah, totally. I agree with you on that one. See, for me, it's always about building relationships with players. I'm not there to interfere with what they do. I'm just there to document what they do. And for me, I get such a big buzz of following a player, male or female, from a very young age to the top. So let's take Joe Leedham, for example. I saw Joe Leedham when she was 14, 15 years old in one of the finals. And I've documented her since then. And to see that I make such a difference in these athletes' lives means the world to me. You know, I don't do this for the money or the accolades or anything. I just do it to make a difference for these players. And when, you know, someone like Joe comes up to me afterwards and says, you know, thank you for what you've done for me, that to me sums it all up. I'm there to make a difference in these players' lives. And again, today, Dan Clark, 100 caps, I remember seeing him at his very first Eurobasket game. He was just a young whippersnapper. And to see him come full circle, here he is, 10 years on, 100 caps. To me, it's quite emotional because I followed his journey. I followed most of the guys' journey from when they first started out. And to me, to document that is priceless because it's part of our basketball heritage.
I remember in London several years ago sitting chatting to Andy Bernstein, who's the the doyen of NBA photographers. It really is the person who's captured all the moments. He also, I think, is the in-house photographer for the LA Lakers. And I was asking him about his career, and he had a book out at that point in time. And it was, you know, so what's the sort of secret that you've got? And he said, a lot of this is just, it's being the right place at the right time, but it's understanding how you take great photographs. And I wondered, before I can ask you about the craft, I mean, how much have you learned, or how have you been able to learn from other photographers and seeing how they go about things? When people like Bernstein, whose work is iconic and is captured just every great moment that the NBA has seen over the last two decades.
You know what, that's a great question, Mark. And for me, growing up, I would run to the shops, I would get a copy of, you know, the NBA magazine, whatever it may be. I think back then it was called Hoop, still going now. And whilst most fans would look at the picture and say, oh, yeah, that's a sick dunk by Jordan, or that's a, you know, whatever. For me, I would go to the little tiny wording at the bottom of each picture that said photo by. And I would see the name, and it would be either Andrew D. Bernstein or it would be Nat S. Butler. And they're the two foremost figures in basketball photography. And for me, I grew up looking at their work on a regular basis. And I thought, I want to copy what they're doing. I want to take a leaf out of their book and see if I can replicate that over on this side of the pond. And obviously, fast forward 20 years, I got to meet both of them, and they're both great guys. And, you know, they gave me lots of advice and everything. And I try and bring my own unique perspective to the game, but also I'm watching what all the other photographers are doing at the same time, seeing what kind of style they have, how do they capture a certain player from a certain angle. And that's what stands me out from everybody else, I suppose.
For those who, I guess, have sat there with their camera phones, or maybe those who have gone to a game with a proper camera and tried to do it, explain your process. You and I are both talking here in Manchester on a game day. What's your process when you're on an assignment and you arrive, you set up, and you know you've got a series of points in the day right through to game time, you've got the game shots. Talk people through what you will do on a game day to get ready and have it all to be there so that when tip-off comes, you're in position to take great shots.
For me, the biggest key thing here is to arrive at the venue with plenty of time. The worst thing you can do is show up half an hour before tip and think, yep, everything's all set, I'm going to take great pictures. Just like the players arrive, you know, a couple of hours before the game to warm up, I do the same too. I arrive maybe 3-4 hours before a game. If it's a venue I've not been to before, then even more important, because I want to check out, you know, the quality of the lighting, you know, the spots where I can sit to capture the stuff. And then I make sure all my tech is working. I make sure the laptop's got enough juice in. I make sure the Wi-Fi is working so I can upload the images afterwards. And then I just get ready. I focus. I make sure that I've got, you know, plenty of water with me to keep refreshed and ready for the action.
And you're getting in a position. You often see you sitting on the baseline. But what for you is the best approach to getting great photographs?
Well, I can't speak for other sports, but when it comes to basketball, you've got to know the game, you know. And I've been fortunate that I used to play the game, I refereed, I coached, so I've got perspectives from almost every angle, as a player, as a coach, as a ref. And so for me, I understand the game. So for example, you know, some team's down a point with 5 seconds to go, and they call a timeout. My thinking head will come on then. What's the coach drawing up? What kind of plays are you going to draw up? Because then I can anticipate what's going to happen on the court, and I'm there ready to capture it. As a player, you know, who's the ball going to go to for that winning shot? Let's take the WBBL Cup final in Birmingham, for example. Sevenoaks are up by one with about 7 seconds to go, and the ball's inbounded. I'm in the right place at the right time. I can see Helen lining up that three-point shot. And as it's going up, 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 I can see she's turning around and putting her hands in the air, and I'm there. Because I kind of, almost like a sixth sense, I kind of saw that was coming. But then that comes with years and years of experience of watching these players week in, week out, knowing their tendencies, what they like to do, where is the favourite spot on the court that they like to shoot from. And all of that lends itself to me then being in the right place at the right time to capture it.
I think Andy Bernstein said this to me as well, is that one of the arts of basketball photography is being able to press that button a second before it happens, because by the time of the process of the camera, basketball's so quick, by the time you press that button, the shot's off.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it was Andy himself who said to me, if you blink, you miss it. And so I always remember that when he said that. And so for me, it's difficult because as a fan, a very close game, as a fan, you just want to put the camera down and watch the game. But my eyes are always glued to, you know, the viewfinder. I don't see the game as everybody else would, because I'm so focused on making sure I've got that winning shot or that winning block. And once you get it, it's a feeling of great excitement. And obviously now with the digital age, you can, moments later, you can just review it on the back of the screen. Did I get it? Did I get it? And once you've got it, you know, yep, you're in for a good night.
You're sitting here and you've got your official Kappa British Basketball top on, and one of your many roles is, you know, you're now the official photographer both of the BBL and of British Basketball. But I wonder, is in a sense that you're kind of part of the team, and is that in a nice sense that almost, I don't want to sound this horribly cliched, but you're almost kind of getting to represent your country in a sort of way as well?
I totally agree with you. I mean, for years I would just be just another photographer coming to GB games and doing it. But since I started doing it officially for GB, I felt like I was part of the family too. And that's important because then you're welcomed into that fold. It's almost like an inner circle where they trust you. You build the relationships like we talked about before. And everything then becomes more easy. Like for years, I've begged, I've asked, I've repeatedly knocked on that door about getting access on the team bus, having access to team talks in the locker room before, after games. And it's always used to be, no, sorry, we can't allow that. But since I've been part of the family, it's totally different. And they, you know, they can't do enough for you. And it's a great sense of achievement, but it also gives me more motivation to keep doing more for the sport, for the team. And it's something that I take great pride in.
You've built a lot of friendships. I mean, who, I guess, this kind of goes back to the earlier question, but who has been the most fun players to document? Because you must have built, you know, friendships, and you show up at venues and guys and girls that know you and know your work and actually want to be photographed by you.
That's a good question. Again, best players. You know, to be fair, most of them, they know I'm there. I'm like one of those little flies on the wall. They know I'm there, and they want to swat it away, but they can't because it's too high up in the ceiling or whatever. And they just do their thing on the court, and I do my thing on the sides. And, you know, days later, I'll get an email or something saying, oh, can we have some pictures? And that's as exciting as it gets for me. I don't have a particular player who's come up to me to say, can I have a picture? More or less everyone that I interact with on a game-by-game basis all know that they just have to drop me a message and they'll get the pictures that they need, and that's all that matters.
But who's the best subject? Because there must be some quite animated characters that are quite snazzy to get a photograph. They always come, you know, pull off the right face, right motion.
The only one I can think of right now, and it's a GB player, it's a women's player, is Xenia Stewart. The moment she sees I'm in the house, that was it, you know, makeup on and make sure her hair's all good. And I remember for a period of maybe about 6 or 7 years, she had this routine where she would tie her shoelace underneath one of the baskets, and she knew I was sat there, and she would always turn around and give me that cheeky smile of hers, and she knew I would snap it. And it went on for 6 years or 7 years. So yeah, that was one of my favourites.
Maybe it's just lucky superstition.
Probably, you never know.
Sadly missed from the GBC, now Xenia. Last couple of things, an anecdote here. This, I guess, a story that I suppose sums you up as well. You're getting married this year, and to the lovely Jane. A lot of people are very excited about that. But tell us about the proposal.
Okay, so I've always wanted to propose on my own terms. And I was just sat there one day thinking, how can I do it? How can I do it? And then suddenly, like a light bulb, it went off. Hold on a second. My first letter of my first name and her first letter is MJ. Whoa. All sorts of, you know, alarm bells were ringing. And I thought, MJ, right, we've got to do something with this MJ thing. Wait a minute. Why don't we go to Chicago? Why don't we go to the MJ statue at the United Center? why don't I get down on one knee and propose to her? It would be a full circle, basically, of my love for her, my love for the game of basketball, and my love for one of the greatest players of all time. And so, yeah, and we happened to be in Orlando for her birthday with the family, and I thought, yeah, sure, we can just kind of sneak out for a couple of nights and fly out to Chicago while we're here, do the do, and then come back, and that's exactly what happened.
And did the statue weep? Was there a crowd around you that spotted this at the United Center?
Well, it was funny because we got there on the Saturday, and I was going to originally propose to her on the Sunday, but my nerves were just all over the place, and I thought, you know what, let's just go and do it now because I'm hyper. Let's just get it out of the way so that at least we can enjoy the Sunday before we fly back to Orlando. So we get to the arena, and obviously last few years they've moved the statue indoors. It used to be outdoors. So it's indoors, and every single door we opened or tried to open was closed. And I'm thinking, oh God, no, don't tell me that it's shut. Come all this way. What am I going to do now? Luckily, we saw one door that was open. There was people inside, and I thought, well, how did they get in there? And then when we found out, there was just one door in the whole arena that was open to walk through, we thought, oh, happy days. We went straight in, and actually, I got the security guards involved with the whole thing, and at first, they were like, what's this guy doing? Then when I told them the story, they kind of all warmed up to it. One of the security guards had just gone outside for his lunch, and the other guy radioed him in saying, yo, you need to come back. Something's going down in here, you need to come back. So they both came back, and one of them actually videoed it while I got down on one knee. And it was only until afterwards that I played back the footage that I realised there was actually a crowd of people all watching. Thank God I didn't see them when I got down, because I would have been absolutely nervous as. But it was a great day, and I was glad I did it the way I did. And yeah, I can't wait to get married.
Well, I know we wish you all the best for that. You've opened a lot of windows and a lot of doors to a lot of people to see inside basketball. Long may it continue. Mansoor Ahmed, thank you very much for being our guest on this MVP cast.
No, thank you for having me. It's been a fun experience. Thank you.
That's it for this edition of the MVP cast. Don't forget, you can download previous editions via our website at mvp247.com. Just click on the podcast page or subscribe at your preferred podcast provider. More episodes to come very soon, but for now, from me, Mark Woods, it's goodbye.